Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, April 8th, 2026, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza, who I am actually with today. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Chag Pesach Sameach! Happy Passover! How's yours going? And happy Easter if you celebrate. Did you have a nice Easter?
Yeah, we didn't do anything.
Yeah,
that was nice.
That was a nice Easter. So you're not into going to church or having dinner?
No. Well, you know, Mom's not around anymore, so, you know, we don't really do Easter.
Susan and I
aren't real big on the Easter thing because, you know, we did it for Mom.
Yeah, and I give you a chocolate bunny.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Chocolate bunny's good. You gave me more than a chocolate bunny. You gave me a half a year supply of chocolate.
I know, but some of them have wheat in them, so I may have to get rid of them.
You should dispose of those, or you can consume them, or bring them to your office.
No.
Nope.
I can't do that either.
They
don't like it when I bring them not so holistically oriented treats.
Lovely.
So what I might do is make an Easter basket for the soup kitchen.
That might happen.
I might clean out some of the goodies and give them away, because I didn't realize, because there's a lot of them and I don't need to eat them all, so that's okay. But I like to have a little chocolate, and we didn't get to go to Divine Treasures. Probably we should make a Divine Treasures run before too long. Maybe she'll have some leftover Easter candy. You know who has leftover Easter candy? CVS. And, you know, they get you if you have a prescription. So anyway, I had Passover.
We don't need any more.
No, I know. We don't need any more. It's all true. For Passover, I've been having a lot of doctor's appointments. So the Seders, the first two Seders were Wednesday and Thursday. And I didn't feel like going anywhere. Unfortunately, my sister had a Seder in her home in New Jersey. So I Facebook messengered into her, and I participated in that Seder, and that was perfect, because I had been to two doctor's appointments far away that day, and I was very happy to just be at home. And when I was done with the Seder, I was done and I was home. I really appreciated that, and I got to do it. And I mean, I was very grateful, because a friend did invite me to Seder for that night, but I had work the next morning and I had those two doctor's appointments. And if I hadn't had the doctor's appointments, I might have gone out, but I just couldn't manage it. So it was meaningful. I did enjoy it. I did enjoy seeing my sister and my nephews and my brother-in-law on the Facebook Messenger and reading and singing with them. And that was fine. And I've been eating matzah, and I've been keeping kosher for Passover as best as I can. I went out with you guys after the bike ride to the Aero Diner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, going out to a diner is not necessarily going to be truly kosher for Passover, but it's okay. I did my best. And this is what I did. I had a veggie omelet, and I told them to hold the cheese, not so much because the cheese isn't kosher for Passover, but because the cheese isn't kosher for Franover. So I had a veggie omelet, and yes, and I said no cheese, no onions, and they made me one of those, and I said no toast, and instead I had a little fruit cup, and the fruit cup was big, so it took me 3 days to eat it, and I ate half of it and took the rest home, and ate that, and I had hash browns, and they give you way too much food, so I brought home half the omelet and half the hash browns, and half the fruit cup. And I was amazed at what our friends were able to finish off what they ate. It was a lot of food.
It's a lot of food.
And you were not.
I'm still eating mine.
Right, exactly. And I have not finished mine yet either. But it was enjoyable to go to the Aero Diner. They have adorable, friendly young servers there. And it's a classic diner. And the Aero Diner is very interesting because it was a classic, you know, like a boxcar diner, and it was moved from, it was the South Windham Diner, and it got moved mm-hmm. to North Windham, and now it's called the Aero Diner because it's in view of the airport. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming that's why they called it the Aero Diner.
It is.
Yeah.
They have a giant propeller in the back. Yeah. On the wall and yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of cool. And did you know you could eat outside there? I don't mm-hmm. know if they have the picnic table set mm-hmm. out right now, but they, but in season you can eat outside. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're open every day, though. I think they're open on the weekends, mostly on the weekends.
Not real sure.
Yeah. So, anyway, it was fun to go there. And the other thing was we had just come from a road ride, and it was Ron's first road ride since January, and it was my second. And my first road ride was the day before. I rode out 5 miles to test my body and my bike, and I did fine. And then we rode like 15 miles.
Yep. By the time we were done, yeah.
Right.
Riding there,
right.
Riding home. Was
and it was very hard for Ron because he has a health issue right now. And his latest health issue, like he doesn't have enough, is yeah. he's anemic. And yeah. so he's anemic and he's iron deficient. He's markedly iron deficient. So he's bleeding somewhere. So this is kind of scary.
And but, I have a small bridge behind my neck.
And you have a small bridge. Well, then there's that. Of course, there's,
then
a
there's
small
that.
Bridge. Then there's a small bridge.
Which was
your neck.
The uncomfortable part of the
yes,
ride. But I was also working harder than I should have been working for that ride.
Yeah.
I was in the upper zones as far as my
well, again, you're anemic.
System. Right.
I think you underestimated what anemia does to you. It's
and,
you're not getting proper oxygenation to your muscles.
Right.
In order to move.
And you know what it affects? It affects your VO2 max.
Of course.
Because you can't, so you can't process oxygen
yeah.
as well,
that's
which is
right.
why my heart rate was higher than normal.
So we have to figure out, they have to figure out where you're bleeding from. We hope that it's simply the aspirin. You were taking 81 milligrams of aspirin a day, mm-hmm. which you have stopped. And that can absolutely, at somebody your age, Altacocker.
Right.
81 milligrams of aspirin a day.
You're
every
not
time,
that far behind me, you know.
I know. 81 milligrams of aspirin. Any dose of aspirin that you take, as soon as it hits your stomach, you bleed mm-hmm. every single time. So if you take aspirin every day, you're going to bleed a little bit mm-hmm. every single day.
Yep.
So it is possible that it was the aspirin. And you also have some gastric symptoms, some stomach symptoms. You're burping a lot.
Right. I am.
Right.
And
so
that's been going on for a while.
So your
yeah.
your stomach is cranky, and we have to figure
cranky.
Out what you are willing to ingest to help repair your stomach. My sister
mm-hmm.
asked me that when I was telling her about it.
You said
there's something
something
you could
about
take.
An aloe juice.
Yes, you could drink
yeah.
aloe juice. You can absolutely have aloe juice, and you just have to find one that's palatable to you. If you get, there's certain brands that don't taste like anything and that have aloe in them, and aloe is a wonderful repair for your tummy. There are other herbs that are great for repairing tummies and great for gastritis. Just go ahead.
Wow, they sell it at CVS of all places.
Yeah, CVS has a whole health food section.
Yeah, that's
yeah.
Impressive.
So when do you pick up your next prescription?
Actually, I should do that within the next day or two.
Okay, so go to CVS and see if they have some
for
you.
There,
you just have to make sure you can that it's palatable to you, and if it's not, you can throw it into something that is palatable, and it's fine. You can also drink marshmallow root tea, which we have. It's just a pain to make. The way you make marshmallow root tea is best made as a cold infusion. So what you do is you put a teaspoon per cup of water in a glass jar, and we have plenty of glass jars because we've now taken to using 16-ounce mason jars, and I bought a flat of them, and then we're saving mason jars from things we purchased, like from, you know, from like my pickled beets and my pickled this and that. So we have a bunch of mason jars, and we love the 16-ounce mason jars because they're very easy to clean. So you would take your 16-ounce mason jar, which is easy to clean. You put in, because 16 ounces, I would put in 2 heaping teaspoons of marshmallow root. And then you close it up. And you put some fresh water into it. We have wonderful water from our well. You just fill it up with water. You stick it in the fridge overnight. And now you have a cold infusion. And, you know, you're welcome to drink it with the marshmallow root still in there. But you probably don't want to. So you could strain it. Then you just drink it. And it's very pleasant. It's very mild tasting. And if you're not crazy about the way it tastes, you could mix it with something else. When I drink marshmallow root tea, I will squeeze a little lemon into it. You could mix it with a juice that you find palatable, or you could mix it with another tea that you like. You could throw it into your smoothie if you want. You know, because if you put any water in your smoothie, you could put the marshmallow root tea in it if you want to. Maybe we'll get you set up on that. The other thing you can do is you what's pleasant is you can do slippery elm lozenges, and you can chew slippery elm or deglycerinated licorice lozenges. Would you do a chewable if I gave you a chewable?
Yeah, I told you that this morning. I would do that.
Well, I'm giving you a chew. You're going to get a chewable vitamin B12 because I think your vitamin B12 is a little subclinically low. I can get you chewable DGL or slippery elm. And the good thing about chewing those up is when you chew or you take a liquid or you take a powder and swallow it, or you take a powder mixed into liquid, you get the benefit that when you swallow a pill, it goes all the way down into your stomach before it even thinks about opening up. And then if it's enterically coated, it doesn't even open until it gets into your small intestine. But if you're doing a pill, or if you're doing a chewable, a liquid, or a powder, if you have any reflux at all, it will hit the back of your throat. So when you drink something soothing or take something soothing that you chewed that's a powder, as you're swallowing it, you get the benefit of it in your throat, in your entire esophagus, and at your lower esophageal sphincter, that opening ring of muscle that goes into your stomach. So you get benefit all the way down, and that helps to reduce inflammation. I really love aloe and comfrey. Aloe and comfrey are particularly good because they really help to repair the lining of the stomach. So does DGL. So does deglycerinated licorice. And deglycerinated licorice is also anti-inflammatory. So when you have gastritis, obviously you have inflammation. So the reason you bleed in your stomach from aspirin is inflammation. So you want to do things that reduce inflammation. Guess what else reduces inflammation? It's something you love.
Chocolate.
Actually, I think cocoa flavanols do reduce inflammation, but that's not what I'm thinking of. It's something else you love.
Something else I love?
Yeah, something you love that you chew on it and you drink it, and not ice cream.
Oh,
no. Something you drink, something you chew on, something you put in our food a lot.
Something
that you love.
I have a lot of things that I love.
Yeah, a lot of things that you love that you get from Hosmer.
Oh, ginger.
Yes, yeah. Ginger is a wonderful... I don't think of ginger as being as reparative, whereas things that are mucilaginous really do help to repair the lining of the stomach. Ginger is more anti-inflammatory. So that ginger tea you made, you should have at it.
Yeah.
Just keep doing the ginger tea. You can eat the ginger candies. You can drink the ginger beer, ginger whatever, and put it in our food.
Usually have a cup of ginger turmeric tea a day.
Excellent. So you want to keep doing that. We'll keep you in the ginger turmeric tea. That's perfect because, again, you're drinking it as tea. So it's hitting your throat, it's hitting your esophagus, it's hitting your lower esophageal sphincter, and it's hitting your actual stomach. So that's very good, too. And the other thing is you are... Not only are you anemic, but you're iron deficient because they measured your ferritin and your iron, and they're both low. So you're losing iron. So we don't know 100% if this is coming from your stomach. We're assuming it is because you were taking baby aspirin a day. And I've read about older people taking baby aspirin, and 81 milligrams of aspirin a day can do exactly what you have. The other concern is that you have that hot spot in your small intestine where, you know, they thought there was the minor blockage.
I had a resection. Right.
That's right. And that you may be irritated and bleeding a bit from there. And I don't know if they do anything about that. But again, if you're willing to do all these GI anti-inflammatories, you'll probably help that. You're taking a curcumin pill a day, right? A turmeric pill?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. So you're doing that too. You're doing a lot of things that can help. I'm hoping that it's just the aspirin. And what should happen is as you take the iron, we gave him iron to take, and I gave him a brand of iron that has some cofactors in it. So in order to help to absorb iron, you usually have a bit of B12, folate, and definitely vitamin C. So by the way, if you want, when you take your iron pill, if you want to get a sip of it, have anything with vitamin C in it. You could, I don't know if you want to do orange juice. You don't have to do orange juice. You could do water with lemon in it. You could do a kiwi. You could do a strawberry.
Yeah, I had it with my protein drink this morning. But yeah.
Right. Yeah. So anything with vitamin C. Vitamin C helps you to absorb iron.
Oh, okay.
Good. Yes, and there's a little bit of vitamin C in your iron pill. But
is there vitamin C in aloe juice?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. You can look that up. There's probably, it doesn't taste sour, so I doubt it. And vitamin C is sour. So anything that vitamin C is in, it's sour. So, I mean, think about how tart strawberries are. Kiwi fruit is a wonderful source of vitamin C. Think about how tart that is. Oranges and lemons and limes. So you should be like adding oranges and lemons to our food, like put it on our fish. And the other thing is, because you're iron deficient and because you tolerate beef, you should have a couple of steaks a week. Have some steak, get some grass-fed steak, or you could have a burger or two.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have we get burgers on the weekend, and I'll take my turkey, and you can have beef. And if you want to have steak, I won't have the steak because I just don't digest it well. But, you know, make something else for me and you have steak and off you go. Also, we have those meat sticks. If you want to grab a meat stick now and again, that's another way you can get it. And make sure it's beef.
Yeah.
Take one of the beef ones.
Yeah.
So eat those and you'll get, then we'll get your iron up faster. Because you had that friend who told you he was also iron deficient and anemic, and he started taking iron, and he felt much better right away. You know what may happen is when you go see your physician, you're not going to see your physician for a while?
Quite a while, yeah.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
Because you're almost at the point where you could have an infusion.
Yeah.
That you could take one, like just one or two iron infusions, you'd feel better a lot faster. Mm-hmm. But he hasn't offered that to you, so what are you going to do? Yeah. And he hasn't said to you, go see the rheumatologist. So that's interesting. But this is interesting that this poor guy, he had this anemia. He's like, and you rode on the bike and you felt like, ugh, you didn't feel good on the bike. And, you know, he thought it was because he wasn't fit. But I don't know how much of it was that and how much of it is he's actually anemic. Because your friend felt like he could barely, you know, crank out.
He was out running. Yeah.
Right.
And he's 10 years younger than I am.
Right.
But very fit.
Well, I told you, and while we were coming home on the bike, I felt really good. And I said to you, how did you do? And he said, I felt terrible. And I said, well, don't forget, you're very anemic. That's probably why. And you got confirmation when you talked to your friend. So don't underestimate anemia. If you feel yucky and extremely tired, you need to go see your doctor because there's all kinds of basic things that we'll check. If my patients come in and they say all of a sudden I'm much more tired than I used to be, I say, all right, I'm going to do some blood work and check all the tired things. So even if I've done it recently or not too long ago or within the year, I will recheck their iron, their B12, a CBC, which is a complete blood count. That's the blood work that you do to check for hemoglobin and hematocrit. The definition of anemia, the word means the emia means what's in your blood. Anemia means no blood. Hyperemia means too much blood. Homocystinemia means that you have excessive homocysteine in your blood, et cetera, et cetera. So anemia means you have no blood. That's what it means. But the actual medical definition of anemia is that you have low hemoglobin and hematocrit. Hemoglobin is the amount of pigment in your red blood cells. And the pigment in the red blood cells, that hemoglobin, it has a ring. And at the center of the ring is iron. And so the ring is called a heme ring. And hemoglobin's job is to run around your body and dump off and pick up iron and therefore oxygen. And iron is very useful because it oxidizes readily. So it's going to give up its oxygen. It's going to give up its oxygen easily, and it's going to take on oxygen easily. So when your iron, when your blood goes into your heart, it gets back, when it comes back into your heart, it goes through the pulmonary artery. Yes, and it's interesting because the pulmonary artery is the only artery in your body that has purple blood in it. It's an art because usually arteries have fresh red blood,
okay.
And then you go around the capillary and come back, and now it has purple blood because when you look at your veins, aren't they kind of purple?
Yeah.
That's because they're deoxygenated. They've dumped off all the oxygen, and then they turn around. They make a UE. They bang a UE in your capillaries, and now they're kind of purple. And the arteries, and you know, the goddess was very smart when she designed us because your arteries are buried deep inside your body, so you can't see your arteries. You can feel them. You can feel there are some pulse points where you can feel your artery. So when you feel your radial artery in your wrist, that's you can feel the artery. You can really see it because it's deeper in your skin than the veins. But if you look at your wrist, you could see the veins because the veins are closer to the surface because they don't have their own pulse in them. They are less muscularized. The way that the veins get the blood back up to the heart is by the pulsing of the arteries, by the movement of your muscles, and also by gates. There are little gates in your veins. And when you have varicose veins, those gates don't work so well anymore, and you lose tone in your veins. So the blood will tend to pool in them, and then you go get them fixed and like that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, so when you, for your blood to oxygenate, what happens is it goes back to your heart, and then it goes out the pulmonary artery to your lungs, and then it diffuses into the lungs, and it goes through the arterial branches of the lungs, gets down into your alveoli, which are the air sacs, and you breathe. As you're breathing, the blood gets reoxygenated, and it bangs a UE and comes back, and it goes into the arterial system that goes back to the heart. So then you have the pulmonary artery, which is the only the pulmonary vein, which is the only vein in the body that has red blood in it, that has oxygenated blood in it, goes back to the heart and goes into the left atrium, down through the mitral valve into the left ventricle, and then gets sent out to the rest of the body for use. And then it all starts all over again. And that process of your blood making a complete circuit takes 23 seconds. Do you know that?
No.
Yeah. So your little, this red blood cell that's leaving your heart is going to take 23 seconds to get through your entire body and come back. How cool is that? So when you do aerobic exercise, everything takes less time because your heart is beating faster and you get more oxygenation, more opportunities for oxygenation because you're breathing harder and you're breathing more. So you're getting a lot of oxygenation going on and your body's like, whoa, she's doing a lot of exercise, so I better make more blood vessels. And so it does, and you get more blood vessels. So anyway, Ron's anemia. When a man has anemia, you look for the bleed. And the first place you look for the bleed is in the GI, in the gastrointestinal system. And our presumption is that it's from the aspirin, because aspirin not only reduces inflammation, but it also causes inflammation. It's a cyclooxygenase inhibitor, which inhibits the cyclooxygenase inflammatory pathway, but it also increases the lipoxygenase pathway. So it causes inflammation in your stomach, and it causes inflammation, irritation, and bleeding. So we're hoping that that's what it is, and he's just been taking it. How many years straight have you been taking aspirin?
Oh, God, since I had my heart surgery.
Right, so that's 4 years. So he's on 4 years of aspirin. For 5 years.
Five right now.
5 years of aspirin. So, yeah. But didn't you take breaks?
I've taken breaks because I had surgeries and they didn't want me taking it for surgery.
Right.
So I took breaks then, but no longer than 2 or 3 weeks. It's very much.
Right, so you've been on aspirin, save for 2 or 3 weeks here and there, for 5 years. So from age 65 to 70, you've been on aspirin. Mm-hmm. Oops. So that's probably what's going on.
Probably.
Secondarily, it could be the thing in the small intestine, but I'm betting on the aspirin.
Right.
So what
and
should
of
happen?
Of course, my cardiologist is not going to be in love with the fact that I don't want to take it anymore.
Yeah, but you can't bleed to death and you can't walk around anemic. One
right.
of the ways you keep your heart healthy and keep your cholesterol down is to exercise and to move and to be in your life.
But I can't exercise if I'm anemic.
That's right. So
I mean,
some
I
of
can,
these,
but it's really difficult.
It's not even good for you to do that, to push your body when you're anemic. It's bad for you because you can't you're ischemic. your tissues, it's bad for you. You're going to wind up getting cramps and injuring yourself. You can't do it. It's not reasonable. I will give you things to thin your blood. They're not going to work as well as aspirin, but they'll do something. And I gave you the vitamin E with anatotocotrienols, right? I give you the anatotocotrienols. It's a little bottle, and it has little dark pills in it. It's anatotocotrienols.
I have no idea.
So we have to look and make sure I gave that to you.
I have no idea.
But yeah, you need anatotocotrienols. You can take that instead of the aspirin. That does, I mean, fish oil, anatotocotrienols, eating fish, eating fruits and vegetables. Those are all blood thinners. I mean, there's a lot of things that reduce platelet aggregation that are not aspirin. Aspirin is just too much, and it causes anemia, whereas the vitamin E is not going to cause anemia. And then we're going to help you repair your gut by offering you aloe. Maybe we'll do marshmallow root tea, and I'll get you some chewable DGL and slippery elm lozenges. And those you'll enjoy taking, because one of them, you like licorice.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get you the licorice, and the slippery elm you probably like too. I mean, it tastes kind of like maple. And you can just chew on one of those anytime. We won't make a big deal of it, but the more you do it, the better your tummy is going to be. If you feel particularly irpy, you can pop one. Mm-hmm. You probably feel better.
Okay.
Yes. Irpy.
Well, I'm sure you will have a lot of suggestions.
I have a lot of suggestions because that's my jam.
That is your jam.
Right. So I did a funny thing. I posted on Facebook for no particular reason. Here is the song Ready to Go by Republica. This is my jam. It's one of my favorite jams. So Steve Herzog from WHUS wrote, hey, this is a great song. Why I thought a jam was when people get together to improvise. And I said, that's true. That is a name for it. And when you have a jam band, it's because jam bands connotes not just that they like to get together and improvise, but they also have a psychedelic theme. So the jam bands are the Grateful Dead and Blues Traveler and Nickel Creek and Fish. Those are examples of jam bands. But even though jazz players jam, but jam bands are defined as bands that jam who are also have a psychedelic theme. So,
okay.
But that's my jam. You can say that's my jam about any song that you really like. You can also say that's my jam about anything you really like. So bicycles, that's my jam. The color pink, that's my jam. So you can, you know, when you enjoy a jam, you enjoy really good, you're enjoying music that you really enjoy, and you're enjoying people improvising.
Mm-hmm.
But when you enjoy a jam, but it's been extrapolated to mean anything at all that you really like. So, and certainly a song that you really like. So, Ready to Go by Republica, that's my jam. So shout out to Kasia Dent, who I thought of her when I put that up, and she said, that's so funny you said that, because I was learning this song to sing in a band, and in the 90s, I colored my hair with the red stripes like the lead singer in Republica. So I thought that was kind of cool. So maybe one day I'll get to hear her sing it. So it's still Passover, and I had the Seder, and I'm still I'm still being kosher for Passover-ish. And I'm eating matzah, but I eat gluten-free matzah, which is technically not entirely kosher for Passover, but I'm not going to eat wheat matzah. I just can't eat that level of wheat. So I eat the gluten-free matzah, and I don't wind up eating a lot of it because I find other things to eat, and I'm not that crazy about it. So I eat as much as I can. I buy one box, and I get through some of the box. Anything left goes to the office, and my staff use it. They eat it. They put stuff on it. It's very crumbly. Wheat matzah is not nearly as crumbly. Wheat matzah is crumbly, but gluten-free matzah is terrible. I mean, you go to spread your butter on it, and it just breaks. So I've been eating the matzah now and again with butter and with almond butter and stuff like that. So I also discovered that you can eat you can eat yogurt on Passover, as long as it's either kosher for Passover or it doesn't have anything in it that's not kosher for Passover, like wheat or, you know, any other grains. So, and And the other thing is, if you're Ashkenazic, that means you're from, you know, descended from Eastern European Jews, you may choose to avoid kitniot. And kitniot are any grains that could be fermented and made into bread. So you avoid all legumes and you avoid most seeds. It's a lot of resources allow quinoa and chia seeds because when the rules were made, there were no chia. They didn't know about chia and chia seeds and quinoa. So I eat chia seeds and quinoa on Passover, but nothing else. No other seeds, like no hemp seeds, no pumpkin seeds, no sunflower seeds. I only eat seeds if they're in a fruit. So you can eat raspberries and blackberries and stuff, but so you can eat those seeds. But you wouldn't make bread out of raspberry seeds. And you probably wouldn't make bread out of chia seeds either. I don't know about hemp seeds because you can make anything out of hemp. So I'm observing that. I'm not eating kidney yolk, which means that if a yogurt has corn fiber or corn fiber in it, which is something they use to thicken gluten-free yogurt, I won't eat it. So I do have a lovely brand that I really like that has almost nothing in it. It has coconut and tapioca starch and excellent probiotics, and that's all that's in it. So I eat that. Tapioca is fine because it's a root. It's not a seed. And then in terms of potatoes, you can eat potatoes. You can eat squash. Potatoes. So we had the hash browns at the diner, and we had sweet potato fries the other night. And in terms of potato chips, the only potato chips I'll get are ones that are fried in avocado oil. And there's a nice brand of potato chips you can get that's just potatoes and avocado oil, and that's all it is. I also got a box of Pokush for Passover gluten-free brownies that I made. And the starch to hold them together was potato starch. They were just basically potato starch, chocolate. You add eggs, and then there's some baking soda in it to make it rise. And I don't know that there's anything else in it. But it was basically potato starch and chocolate. They're really good. They're really chewy and chocolate. I would eat them anytime. So they're amazing. They're gluten-free kosher for Passover brownies. And so we ate those. And that was nice. So that's what's going on. So then in terms of my health, I went to see Dr. Lantner, and Dr. Lantner said, your spinal stenosis is much better. Your spine is much more open. Your foramina are much more open. And you're at a point where this is about what you get. And we hope that your nerve will heal in time. But no, you are not a candidate for more surgery at this time.
Good.
That's what he said. I know. So I went, but I still have discomfort in my left leg. And the more I use the leg, the more nerve discomfort I have. So I got a book. The book is by Terry Knight. It's all about how to treat spinal stenosis. So I'm using some of the advice that she gave me there. One of them is to wear a corset. And so we're not talking about a medieval corset. We're talking about a nice...
You mean one that gives you lots of fluff?
When's it... Well, right. Yes, sure.
Right.
Oh, my God.
That's a corset.
But not that kind of corset. This corset is... it's basically... it's glorified shapewear. That's what it is.
I'm thinking of Renaissance.
Okay. that's glorified. So it's glorified shapewear. So it comes from just below your bust and down to your hips, and it gives you just a little bit extra support. So it's not as supportive as a true brace, but it's like a, you know, intensified shapewear. So it's very easy to wear. It gives you just enough support. I definitely feel it, and yet it's not as intense as if you wear an actual brace. So I'm wearing that. And then she's really big about ice. Definitely ice yourself and try to ice at least twice a day, but no more than 10 minutes. More than 10 minutes, you can get frostbite. So I was icing for 20 minutes at a time, and I'm not going to do that anymore. But what I'll do is, like, if I haven't iced in the morning, I will ice when I first sit down to relax for the evening, and then take the ice pack off, and then do it again a little bit later once I've cooled down. And so the ice is anti-inflammatory, and it slows down the nerve communication, so you have a little less pain. So I'm icing my back and I'm icing my knee. She also said something that I didn't realize. You do not ice a part with neuropathy. So if you have numbness in a part, you don't put ice on it because you have compromised nerve sensations and you have compromised circulation in that area. So you could more easily get frostbite. So I didn't realize that. So what you do, if because I have the nerve pain in my leg, I ice the source of the compression, which is in my spine. So the other thing to work on is reducing inflammation any which way. More ways to reduce inflammation. Unfortunately, one of them is losing weight, because when you lose weight, you reduce the amount of fat you have. Fat has insulin in it. Fat also has weight to it, so it puts more pressure on your spine. And when you, the things you do to lose the weight are anti-inflammatory. So, you know, eating a lot more fruits and vegetables and fiber and stuff like that, and taking the sugar out, that helps to reduce inflammation. So, and of course, I'm taking all kinds of anti-inflammatory supplements anyway. So that's going on there. And then he did say it was perfectly fine if I wanted to go to pain management and get a so-called cortisone shots. Did you know that cortisone shots are not cortisone? It's kind of like Novocaine for your teeth. It's not Novocaine. Mm. When you go to the dentist, they don't give you Novocaine. They give you Carbocaine. They haven't used Novocaine in I don't even know how long. They use Carbocaine. And when you get what you're getting is an epidural injection, an epidural pain injection. And what's going in is Depomedrol, which is it's methylprednisolone. And so it's a steroid. And it's a depot, which means that it's got compounds in it to hold it in place, so it slowly releases over time. There's also bupivacaine, which is related to Novocaine and Carbocaine and cocaine and all the canes, and they are anesthetics. So when you have had surgery, so when I had my first epidural injection, I had not had surgery yet, and I went to UConn, and they did not sedate me. I didn't require the sedation, and I didn't want it, and they didn't need to do it. But after you have had surgery, they sedate you. So if I decide to do this, I'm going to get midazolam, which is a benzodiazepine, which I'm not thrilled about. But I had I'm pretty sure they gave me midazolam when I was under for the surgery, so I did okay with it. So you have to be driven. Obviously, you have to be driven, because you can be given enough midazolam to sedate you. So if I do this, Ron will take him. The reason I'm saying if is because I have a hope that in a few weeks my leg will be better. I don't know why I'm hoping that, because it's been so long and it's still up and down. But the good news is I was able to ride my bike, and Dr. Lantner said I can do any exercise I want to. I'm not going to hurt myself. I just might have more pain. And so if that's true, then I could do more exercise. Because the other thing that Terry Knight says is aerobic exercise helps you, and your outcome is better when you get more aerobic exercise. So I'm going to ride my bike to tolerance. And this weekend, I rode 5 miles just to test myself out on Friday. I rode 15 miles with the club. And then I got on the trainer on Sunday because it was raining. And so I got on the trainer for an easy spin for an hour, and that was nice. And I'm pretty okay. And then the other thing is that Crossroads said that it was okay to start doing some more gravitational exercise. So I went back to my normal PT stuff I did wall squats today, and I'll do wall sits. I did wall sits today, and I will do ball squats tomorrow. I'm going to get back to those, because my knee was a little sore after the bike ride, and I think that the wall sits and the ball squats help with that, because they strengthen my knee. So I need to do some knee strengthening exercises. The knee got better soon. It was a little sore after the bike ride, but it got better over the course of the day. And then I'm going to consistently ice the knee as well. And so that was great that it tolerated 15 minutes on the road. I think I felt better after the exercises, after the bike ride this time, than I did when we were in Florida. So that's good news. So I have more. The physical therapy with Crossroads is very nice. I'm still thinking that I would like to have some kind of physical medicine that's just energy medicine, where we're talking to the nerve and saying, okay, nerve, it's okay to calm down. And because I haven't, I'm trying all these things to help this nerve, but if I live my life, I have nerve discomfort and the nerve just doesn't seem to want to heal. And this has never happened to me before where I've had such long-term nerve pain. And Dr. Lantner also says it can take as much as a year for the nerve to calm down, which would make me more likely to consider getting the epidural injection. So we'll see. So now we have a few more fun things to talk about. They're kind of fun things. The next thing I wanted to talk about is sleeping in total darkness. That seems like a silly thing to talk about, but it's very important, and it's something that I try to do. And there are numerous ways to sleep in total darkness. So let's see why it's a good idea to do that. So sleeping in total darkness, wait for it, it's good for your heart. And that was in a study. There was a study that exposure to light during sleep is associated with a higher risk of cardiovascular disease. Go figure. During your sleep, ambient light contributes to brain stress that can cause arterial inflammation, which can lead to a heart attack or stroke. So for optimal sleeping environments, darker is better, but complete darkness is best. So there was a study that builds on existing evidence that sleeping in less than complete darkness can be detrimental to health, specifically damaging the cardiovascular system. When you sleep while exposed to higher levels of light, it's associated with stress-related brain activity, which can cause arterial inflammation through your body, which increases the likelihood of heart and stroke. After 10 years, 17% of the study participants developed major cardiovascular issues. They found that the amount of artificial light at night exposure increased. So did the risk of eventual heart disease. Each standard deviation upward in light was associated with a 35% increased likelihood of a heart attack over the following 5 years and 22% over the next 10 years. So people who lived in areas characterized by elevated environmental or social stressors, noise from traffic, lower neighborhood income levels, or at even higher risk from light exposure at night. So the study was done by the American Heart Association, and they have the results have yet to be published. So artificial light drives inflammation and cardiovascular disease. So the study involved 466 adults who received PET and CT brain imaging scans at Mass General Hospital in Boston between 2005 and 2008, and the median age was 55, 43% were male, 90% were white, and just over 10 were non-white, which probably they should have adjusted that, because people who are African-American have a higher risk of cardiovascular disease. It would have been nice to have more of a diverse population, or do another study where most of the people were diverse populations. So the scans were performed as routine imaging at the hospital. The CAT scans revealed the anatomical details of the participant's brain, while PET scans recorded metabolic activity in the tissues. None had heart disease or cancer at the time of their scans. To measure the lighting conditions in each of the homes where participants had been sleeping, the study authors used data from the visible infrared imaging radiometer suite day-night band aboard the SWOMI National Polar Orbiting Partnership satellite. Radiative transfer modeling provided high localized estimates of ground level sky brightness based on satellite damage, which didn't include starlight and moonlight. The new study adds to a growing body of evidence suggesting that sleeping in a dark environment is the healthiest way to sleep. Both animal and human intervention studies have demonstrated that light exposure at night can disrupt multiple neurophysiological systems, disrupting both metabolism and inflammation. A study in 2022 found that when one group of participants slept in a typical room with light around 100 lux, considered to be the low end of average bedroom lighting, while another slept in an even dimmer light of less than 3, the first group had an increased heart rate, reduced deep sleep, and impaired insulin sensitivity. Oh my goodness. In a recent cohort study, the same typical level of room light was prospectively linked to a higher risk of cardiovascular disease, such as myocardial infarction, underscoring the real-world relevance of such adverse exposures. So blue light from mobile screens is a well-known obstacle to sound sleep, but ambient light is also a contributor. In a 2022 meta-analysis, they found that those with greater levels of land exposure, especially indoor, had a 22% greater risk of sleep problems. And a 2014 study of 700 older individuals found a direct association between light at night and atherosclerosis, specifically increased intima media thickness of the common carotid artery. Inflammation is a result of stress, and inflammation is a primary driver of atherosclerosis and therefore heart disease and stroke. So the heart and brain are interconnected, as what happens to the arteries of the heart is also occurring in vessels of the brain. Those with brighter bedrooms, meaning more lights on at night, have shown higher rates of heart disease. Darkness signals the body to produce melatonin and decreases the body's processes, lowers blood pressure. The longer the lights are on at night, the more delayed is this healthy nighttime drop in blood pressure. Additionally, your morning hormones spike later, like your cortisol, for example. Sleep quality duration is important for heart health. Less than 6 hours of sleep has demonstrated higher risk of heart disease. So here's more tips. Like, you need more tips. First of all, drink plenty of water. So here's a few ideas for creating an optimal darker sleeping environment. Cover your windows. If you have curtains or shades, close them tightly. If they don't block out external light, consider acquiring blackout curtains. A lower cost alternative is to cover windows with aluminum foil to block light. Ick, we're not doing that.
No.
We could close our shades at night.
We could pull the shades.
Yeah,
down.
Especially when the moon is large.
Oh boy, yeah.
Yeah.
It's that full moon, it gets real bright.
Right. So we might want to consider doing that.
That's
close the gap. The gap between your bedroom door and the rest of your home can leak considerable light into your sleeping area. I don't know if we have that much problem with that. It's a problem when that we have a light on in the living room that's on a timer. When do you have that set to go off? To turn off?
It turns off at like 10:30 at night.
Yeah, you should make that earlier. I think you should make it earlier. Make it more like
10 o'clock.
10 would be better. Yeah. So the gap between your bedroom door and the rest of your home, where, and you could wear a sleep mask if you want to. If you're not, and I wouldn't be comfortable wearing a sleep mask. I do something funny though. I have plushies on my bed. And I don't put those in front of me to keep away from you. That's not why they're there. They're there to block out light. That's why they're there. And if I would put my face in you, I could do the same thing. So that's something to consider too. But the plushies are in front of my face, especially the big one, it's to block out light. That's why they're there. And when I close my eyes and I feel like I'm in that complete darkness, it is so soothing. I can feel my whole body just relaxing. And if you want to relax during the day, if you want to close your eyes and take a nap, it's probably, it's during the day and it's somewhere where you can't control the light. One of the things to do is to either carry a cloth. Make sure you have a cloth with you everywhere you go where you can cover your eyes. You can use a cloth or you can carry a sleep mask. That I would consider doing, just carrying a sleep mask. I actually have one at the office, but I have a couple of sleep masks and they're nice and plushy, but one is pale pink and one is pale blue. And I was thinking of purchasing some that are dark colors because, you know, the pale pink doesn't work as well. And maybe I'll try...
Like black.
Right! Black or navy or burgundy. You can get a set of those. And you don't want to have always on night lights. So it's better to have motion sensing night lights. And so I decided that because, you know, when we talked about this at the conference I just went to, that when you get older, you have to go to the bathroom more at night. And when you go to the bathroom, you turn the light on so you can see what you're doing. And that turning on the light flips on your, it suppresses your melatonin, so it makes it harder to get back to sleep. And when you're older, you have more trouble getting back to sleep anyway. So I decided, oh my goodness, that's me. I mean, I get up maybe one or two times a night to use the bathroom, and I turn the lights on. So I said, all right, it's time for me to get a motion-sensing nightlight. So I got one, and it works great. And I just have to remember not to turn the light on when I go to the bathroom. Because I'll turn it on anyway, because I've done that forever. So I have to remember not to do that. Anyway, so, and also I, at my mother's, it's brighter there. There's more light pollution in her neighborhood.
Yeah, she's in the city.
Basically, yeah. Where we are not, but because we have less trees now, we also have the light coming in from the airport. And when the moon is sitting in the sky, when it's sitting in the western sky, you know, when it's on the way to setting, it shines into our window. So those nights, anyway, we might want to consider drawing the curtains. Because we do have curtains on our windows. We just don't use them. So that's interesting. So is whatever you can do to make your room as dark as possible. So you want to look around. Is there anything, any light that, and the other thing is, you know, we tend to do screens until we go to sleep, which is
not good for you, supposedly.
No, it's not good for you. It really isn't.
No.
I mean, it would be better if we just watch TV, but the watching TV plus the looking at screens, but looking at your phone, looking at your tablet,
that's really not good for you. I just bury myself under my pillow.
Yeah.
Because you've still got something on. And
right. And that's a good thing to do because you're
just
kicking
out
the light.
Pillow over your head. That's all.
Yeah. Well, I use the guys, as you call them. Gino calls his team members guys, and Ron calls my plushies guys.
Yeah.
So I have a great big axolotl that sits in front of my face, and then I actually snuggle another plushie. It's not for comfort. It's for comfort. It's for physical comfort. It's not necessarily for emotional comfort. It's for orthopedic reasons that I don't want my shoulder to be draped all the way down. So I hold something. And for spinal stenosis, when you sleep, you're supposed to have something between, I mean, you're supposed to have like a whole body pillow, but I didn't find that comfortable. So I use a knee pillow in between my legs, a triangular knee pillow between my knees and my thighs. And then I hold a plushie in my arms. And that separates my shoulders, so I'm in a more balanced position. And I asked Steve at Crossroads, should I also have a pillow under my right side to take away from the scoliosis on my left side? And he said, no, that's not a good idea. So I'm not going to do that. But I do an exercise where I put a pillow under my right side and I stay there for a little while, and it helps to take out some of that scoliosis. So that's interesting. So total darkness. When you sleep in total darkness, you make more melatonin. Your melatonin levels stay higher so you can stay asleep more. Your adenosine will stay higher as too. And your cortisol won't spike as soon in the morning, so you get more consistent sleep at night. And you know, do something like, because if you have to go to the bathroom at night, of course you have to go to the bathroom. So motion-sensitive nightlight is the way to go. And make sure it's a soft light, that it's a yellowy light, not a bright white light. Those bright white things that are motion sensitive that you bought, I don't want that in my bathroom.
Yeah, I have soft white ones now.
Yeah, too. I don't want the ones you bought that were those little long ones. You put one in my bathroom. I don't want it there.
I'm gonna take that out.
Take
I've
it
got
out.
A softer one for you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, that's fine. So that's good. So that was very interesting. That. Sleeping in total darkness is good for your cardiovascular health. Who knew that you're more likely to have cardiovascular inflammation if you sleep with light in your room? So getting rid of the light in the room is a good idea. So I don't have a lot of time left to really to start another another topic. So I'll just remind you that the pollen is climbing and climbing,
yes,
and you may want to do some stuff for that. Remember, you can drink nettle tea. Nettle tea is great. It does taste kind of green, so you can mix it with an anti-inflammatory juice like pomegranate or cranberry, and you can squeeze lemon and or lime into it and do it that way. So nettle tea can be very helpful. Quercetin can be very helpful. It's a bioflavonoid that stabilizes mast cells so they won't kick out as much and you won't have as many symptoms. Vitamin C is great, and you can take vitamin C in pills. You can also eat plenty of fruit. There are fruits and vegetables that have vitamin C in them. So that's your kiwi fruit and your strawberries and your citrus And also peppers, any kind of pepper, hot peppers and bell peppers have vitamin C in them. Black currants have vitamin C in them. Brussels sprouts and broccoli have vitamin C in them. Basically, if you eat a good variety of fruits and vegetables, you're going to get vitamin C. So those are, those are starting to come into season. Those leafy greens have vitamin C in them. So the leafy greens are coming in now, and we were able to get leafy greens from our favorite farm, Tobacco Road. And so they're growing greens now because it's now warm enough to do that, which is great.
It is great.
Yeah, it's really nice. So we're going to get salads. Make for beautiful salads, which are really good. And remember, if you're going to eat salad and you're going to eat raw vegetables, you want to consider putting oil and vinegar on it. And it's better to do oil and vinegar than to get commercial salad dressings because you have control over what oil goes on them. So we love olive oil, really good quality olive oil, and avocado oil for salad because they have a lot of monounsaturated fats. They're unlikely to break down. And when you put oil on the leaves, it distresses the leaves so that when you chew them with the oil on them, the fat-soluble vitamins are more bioavailable. So that's your beta-carotene and your vitamin K. They're going to be more bioavailable. And vitamin B1, also you get a little more benefit if you have it with oil. And then vinegar helps to solubilize and distress the greens as well, so you get the water soluble vitamins. So then you're going to get your antioxidants, your vitamins and your minerals, your calcium and your magnesium and your B vitamins, folic acid, all of that good stuff, and vitamin C you're gonna get that more readily when you have vinegar on your salad. And of course, you can season your salad however you like. I mean, you don't need to use salad dressing. I mean, you can get salad dressing that has only olive oil in it, but it tends to get hard. It tends to congeal if it's not at a high temperature, and you don't want it to sit at a really high temperature. So having straight up olive oil is probably a better way to go, or avocado oil. Those are fine too. And then a good quality vinegar, especially one that has the mother, because it's going to have more nutrients and antioxidants in it. So that's what we have time for today. So I'm going to let you go. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcasts at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores and WHUS.org.